Beyond Barbarossa, Episode 81, Summer 1944, North and South. The Red Army's seemingly unstoppable steamroller took Stanislav in the Carpathian foothills, Bialystok in northern Poland, Dvinsk in Latvia, and the Šiauliai rail junction between Riga and East Prussia. Welcome to Beyond Barbarossa, the first English-language podcast in the world to focus on the Eastern Front of World War II. This is Season 4, Episode 81, Summer 1944, North and South. I'm Scott Burry, podcasting as usual from the Redbeard Studio on traditional Anishinaabeg Algonquin land, also called Ottawa, in free, independent, and sovereign Canada. Thank you for joining me. Last episode, number 80, was the first in our fourth season, and I just want to say that you, dear listeners, have surpassed 215,000 downloads. Thank you very much. Before I go on, I just want to remind everyone that you can get episodes early and ad-free by supporting on Patreon. Patreon patrons also get free bonus episodes from time to time, such as profiles of Georgi Zhukov or Semyon Timoshenko, descriptions of the invasion of Poland and the winter war against Finland, and more. Just go to patreon.com/beyondbarbarossa. Last episode brought us up to date in July and August 1944 with a description of the launch of what's now called the Lvov-Sandu Mirs operation, starting 13 July 1944. Stalin would later call it the sixth blow against Nazi Germany of the year. And last episode ended as the Red Army entered the city of Lvov, now called Lviv, on 26 July, not even two full weeks after the start of the campaign on the 13th. So, now we're going to look at the second half, or the later part of July, and some of August 1944. But before we do that, it's time for our regular feature, What Else is Happening in the War? July 1944. General Erwin Rommel, famous for commanding the Afrika Korps, is wounded in France when his car is strafed by the RAF. July 18th. U.S. forces liberate the city of Saint-Lô in Normandy. The same day, General Tojo resigns from the Japanese government, and Emperor Hirohito asks General Kuniaki Koiso to form a new government. July 19th. U.S. forces liberate Livorno, Tuscany, on the Ligurian coast of Italy, 300 kilometers or 200 miles northwest of Rome. July 20th. Colonel Klaus von Stauffenberg leaves a bomb in a briefcase in Hitler's briefing room in his Wolf's Lair, or Eastern Headquarters in Rassenburg, East Prussia. By luck or a miracle or demonic intervention, Hitler survives the attack, although is wounded, and German generals' heads roll. July 21st. U.S. Marines land on Guam in the Pacific. July 22nd. Hitler allows the Wehrmacht to withdraw from the Narva River, the border between Russia and Estonia, 20 kilometers west to the Tannenberg defensive line. 23rd July, the Polish Home Army helps the Red Army drive the Germans out of Lviv in the Lvov Uprising, as Lvov is Polish for Lviv. As discussed last episode, in thanks for the assistance, the NKVD, or Soviet Security Force, arrests and imprisons all members of the Home Army they could. 24th July, U.S. Marines land on Tinian Island, the remaining Japanese holdout of the Marianas Islands. Same day in Normandy, the Allies break out of Saint-Lô and take Coutances. Unfortunately, in this breakout, American bombers mistakenly bomb their own troops in the process. 3rd August, U.S. and Chinese troops capture Myit Kyina in northern Burma from fierce Japanese opposition. On 4th August, the Allies liberate Florence, Tuscany, Italy. In retreat, the Germans destroy historic bridges and buildings. That's what else was happening in the war outside of the Eastern Front. Now let's focus on the Eastern Front. Last episode described the Red Army's capture of Lviv, called Lvov by the Russians, Lvov by the Poles, because before the war, the city had been within Poland, also called Lemberg in German, because it had been in the Austro-Hungarian Empire before the First World War. The town of Przemysl fell to the Soviets the same day that they took Lvov. Now, Przemysl is northwest of Lviv on the Bug River. Some Red Army units managed to cross the Bug River. Even as Red Army boots set foot in Lviv, the Stavka, the Soviet High Command, issued new orders. Push farther north-northwest to Stanislav, and after that, Sandomierz. See map 2 on the webpage for this episode. However, the Germans had built 3 consecutive defensive belts on the way to Sandomierz. Hitler also repeated his mistake again of defining certain cities as strong points where the Wehrmacht was ordered to hold on against any Soviet attack, no matter what. These included Ravoruskaya and Brody, which were already destroyed, and it also included Stanislav. This strategy, the fortress cities, never worked. All it meant was a waste of once strong German units, which could otherwise have been withdrawn and used much more effectively in active withdrawal. Evan Maudsley describes this in his book, Thunder in the East. By the fourth day of the 1944 penetration, the lead Soviet tank units were over the Bug and racing for the next river line 60 miles to the west, the San. The major objective reached by Konev's armies was a bridgehead over the upper Vistula River near the little town of Sandomierz. The 1st Soviet Union's forced Vistula in this sector on 29 July, and Sandomierz itself was finally captured on 18 August. End quote. The upshot was that once the Red Army crossed the San River at Przemysl on 26 July, they reached the Vistula, the river that flows through Warsaw, 3 days later, and they crossed it, establishing bridgeheads on the western side. From there, they went on to capture Sandomierz by 18 August. Once again, I'll quote a friend of the podcast, Anthony Tucker Jones. The Red Army's seemingly unstoppable steamroller took Stanislav in the Carpathian foothills, Bialystok in northern Poland, Vinsk in Latvia, and the Chaljai rail junction between Riga and East Prussia. The 4th Panzer Army fell back on the Vistula, and the 1st Panzer Army retreated southwest to the Carpathians. On 25th July, Moscow issued figures for German losses during the first month of the Soviet offensive operations. 381,000 dead, 158,000 captured, 2,735 tanks and assault guns, 8,702 guns, and 57,000 motor vehicles. This showed the incredible tempo of the Red Army's summer offensives, which easily outstripped its winter operations. A plea was also issued by 16 former German generals captured from Army Group Center that their comrades be made aware that 30 divisions had been annihilated and that the old Army Group Center had ceased to exist. They blamed Hitler for this disaster and called on their comrades to disobey him. End quote. And that's where we'll leave the 1st Ukrainian Front and the German and German Army Group North Ukraine, as well as what was left of Army Group Center, which wasn't much at all at this point. And we're going to turn our attention northward. But first, let's take a short break.
As Scott elegantly describes in each episode of Beyond Barbarossa, the war on the Eastern Front was truly gargantuan, both in terms of its geography and its destructiveness. But given that there is so much territory to cover, and that so many millions of men were involved in the fighting, it's perhaps inevitable that some battles from the Eastern Front get overlooked. I'm David Sumner, and I'm the host of Europe at War, a weekly podcast exploring lesser-known battles and stories of the Second World War with a particular focus on the Eastern Front. From the drama of thousands of trapped German soldiers and terrified civilians attempting to break out of the Halba Pocket, to the unexpected and blistering counterattack launched by German forces on the Red Army during the Battle of Bautzen, many of the Eastern Front's most dramatic battles, particularly those which happened towards the end of the war, have long been neglected by historians, and their stories have remained untold. Until now. So to hear these incredible tales from the Eastern Front, and more, check out Europe at War, available on all podcast platforms. Thank you. Now let's get back to the show.
Hi, Scott here. I hope you're enjoying this episode and that you get a lot out of the whole podcast. Beyond Barbarossa is still, as far as I can tell, the only English language podcast in the world that focuses on the Eastern Front of World War II. If you do like it and you want to help me keep it going, please give it a rating or a review on Apple, Google, Amazon, Podbean, or whatever podcasting platform you listen to it on. That helps let other people know about it. Patreon's another way you can support the podcast, my research, and podcasting expenses. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/beyondbarbarossa and sign up at whatever level of support you choose. Patreon supporters get early, ad-free access to new episodes, as well as exclusive bonus episodes on topics like the Winter War between the USSR and Finland and the pre-Barbarossa invasion of Poland by Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union in 1939. Check it out, won't you? Just go to patreon.com/beyondbarbarossa. Thanks.
Did you know that the cappuccino was invented by a Ukrainian? Or that many first names, like Philip and Agatha, were brought to Western Europe by Ukrainian princesses? Or that a Ukrainian was the first female given the rank of officer in a modern army? Well, if you didn't, and even if you did, you can learn more about my podcast, Wandering the Edge, a podcast about Ukrainian history with a spot of travel, and all in English. And if you like Beyond Barbarossa as much as I do, because, well, it makes my life a whole lot easier since I don't have to do any episodes deep diving into the Eastern Front of the Second World War, please take a listen to Wandering the Edge for a deep dive into Ukrainian history, culture, and traditions. Find out more on wanderingtheedge.net. And now, let's get back to Scott, exploring and explaining the Eastern Front of the Second World War.
Welcome back to episode 81. We've wrapped up the Lviv-Sandomir's operation in Ukraine and Poland for the time being. Now let's shift our focus northward to the Baltic states, specifically Estonia. Most historians cite the end of the Siege of Leningrad as 27 January 1944. From there, the Red Army's Leningrad Front, Volkhov Front, 2nd Baltic Front, and the Baltic Fleet, in all 57 divisions, pushed the Wehrmacht back to the Narva River, the pre-war border with Estonia. Despite continued operations through the winter and spring, the front more or less stagnated there. You can review that in episode 68, after you finish with this episode, mind you. Most of Stavka's attention from that point was in the south, in Ukraine and Crimea. And yes, they launched a major offensive against Finnish forces in Karelia, as discussed last episode. But there wasn't much movement, or any at all, against German Army Group North for months. On 7 June, the Leningrad Front sent human wave attacks all along the Narva Front. As you can expect, they suffered horrendous casualties that no other military would ever accept. Despite that, they reached German positions, but failed to dislodge them. And now we'll shift our attention another 150 kilometers north to where the Red Army launches offensive against the Finns in Karelia, in the isthmus between Lake Ladoga and the Gulf of Finland. They didn't get far, and they lost a lot of men and equipment, but they did retake the city of Viipuri, now called Viborg. The fighting there peaked on 25th June in the Battle of Tali-Ihantala, the largest battle ever fought in the Nordic countries. At this point, the Soviets regained all the territory they had taken from the Finns during the Winter War in 1940 and had lost during the Continuation War after 1941. All that was covered last episode as well. So that's context. We're going to move back again south to the Russian-Estonian border. And you can look at this in map 3 on the webpage for this episode. 1 week into the Battle of Narva, so that's along that river, starting 12th June, the Soviet 2nd Shock Army attacked Ivangorod, southeast of the Narva bridgehead. This too was repulsed by a small Danish group of the Waffen-SS. There were other attempts that only led to more Red Army deaths with little effect on the German occupiers. Taking a look at map 3, which is unfortunately in Cyrillic lettering, you can see the major town of Narva on the Narva River. At Narva on that map looks like Hapaba in Roman letters, so H-A-P-B-A, but in Cyrillic it's pronounced Narva. If you go lower and to the left on the map, which is southwest, you'll see where two of the arrows diverge west and northwest and west-southwest, what looks like K-P backwards N-A-C-O-O. This is Krevasu. That's where the Red Army concentrated its forces to strike northward to the railroad station at Auvers, which looks like Ibepe, a town on the rail line west of Narva-Hapba. The Soviet 2nd Shock Army included the 131st and 191st Rifle Divisions, the 109th Rifle Corps, the 8th Estonian Rifle Corps, two artillery brigades, a separate heavy artillery division, four rocket launcher regiments, an anti-tank regiment, and another 62 armored vehicles. They also brought in the Red Air Force, 546 bombers. In all, 46,385 troops. Against them were 17,100 German troops guarding the Auvers station. After the Soviets swept through Ukraine in the spring and then Belorussia in Operation Bagration in episode 78, against Hitler's orders, Infantry General Johannes Fliessner, commander of Army Detachment Narva, ordered another defensive line constructed 15 miles or 24 kilometers west of Narva. This was the famous Tannenberg Line. On 20th July, the Red 8th Army attacked Narva again. And this is while Operation Bagration is still going on, and the Lviv offensive as well. Despite being outnumbered and outgunned, the Germans, with Estonian units, managed to hold them off and inflict heavy casualties. A word about the Estonians supporting the Germans. Like other small nations in Eastern Europe, the Estonians did not enjoy their occupation by the USSR. Many young Estonian men, like many in Ukraine and other countries, joined the Germans to resist the advance of the Red Army in hopes of establishing a free and independent country of their own when the war was over. Things didn't work out quite that way. Back to Narva. The Germans and Estonians held the Red Army back for 5 days, inflicting 3,000 casualties and destroying 29 tanks and 17 fighter planes, at a cost of 800 casualties, 200 dead, 600 wounded. Then, on the night of 24th to 25th July, the Germans and Estonians withdrew to that Tannenberg defensive line. The Red Army moved into Narva on the 26th of July.
The next day, the Red Army's 201st and 256th Rifle Divisions attacked the Tannenberg Line. Again, the Germans and Estonians inflicted heavy damage, but by the end of the 28th, the Estonian battalion was destroyed. On the 29th, the German 3rd Panzer Corps had only 7 tanks left. Even so, they launched a counterattack that pushed the Red Army back. By 1st August, there were only a few thousand Red Army soldiers left. But the USSR had a lot more resources to draw on, and the Wehrmacht did not. Stavka sent in reinforcements, and on 2nd August, 20,000 soldiers attacked the Tannenberg Line again. But they were again unsuccessful. And by 10th August, the offensive to destroy the German Narva battle group was called off. And that brings us to the end of this episode of Beyond Barbarossa. Thank you for listening to the latest episode of the first English language podcast that tells the full story of the Eastern Front of World War II. As always, I posted some photos and maps on the webpage for this podcast to help you understand how these operations went. That's beyondbarbarossa.podbean.com. Click on the title for this episode, number 81. If you like this episode, please consider following Beyond Barbarossa on your preferred podcasting app. If you have a moment, please leave a rating on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you listen. That really helps alert other people who may not know this podcast exists. If you have a few more minutes, a review would be great. If you have a question, a comment, something to add, something to correct, I try very hard, but I am only human after all. You can reach me by email, scott@beyondbarbarossa.ca, or through the Facebook Beyond Barbarossa page. You can also find me on Blue Sky, Scott the Writer, and on Instagram. And my own website is scottburyauthor.com. By the way, if this episode sounds a little rushed or less polished than usual, that's because I had a little technical problem. I thought I had this all in the can a couple of weeks ago, and when I reviewed it, the sound was just terrible, so I've had to re-record it, and I hope this sounds good to you. Let me know what your impression of the sound is. Original music was composed and recorded by Nicholas Burry. Morse code by Bain Brown. If you know what it's saying, send me an email. If you get it right, I'll send you an autographed book. Until next time, keep your paddles in the water. Slava Ukraina, et vive le Canada!